Welcome, one and all, to another day here at The Damage Web. Me, John Arilla, and joining us after far too long, Adrian Lawrence returns. Adrian, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. I'm glad to be back, and it's good to see you.
It's good to see you. Everybody out there has been seeing you because you were on the show a number of times while I was out on paternity leave, but I really appreciate that. I'm sure it was a major treat for the audience, so thank you for what you did.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you in advance for what you're about to do, because what we're about to do is dive into a whole bunch of news, including a couple of policy-centered strategic choices that Donald Trump, if he becomes the Republican candidate, is apparently gearing up to make in this election, which I think are questionable and might hurt his efforts. So we're going to debate that. We're also going to debate the state of his brains. He says that his brains are not melting out of his ears. He's just being sarcastic. So we're going to evaluate the evidence and see what we think. And then we're going to move on to Ted Cruz accidentally hitting himself in the crotch in attempting to pass a transphobic bill. Alex Jones, like the development of the quest to get some money from him for all of those that he's defamed. We're going to catch up on that and a whole lot more besides. We got a couple stories having to do with AI. It is, as predicted, coming to ruin everything. And the orange peel test in the aftermath. Can an orange divine the quality of your love? We're going to try to figure that out together. And along the way, please send us comments, tweets, super chats. We'll respond to them during our social breaks. And one of you out there will get a $100 Blue Apron gift card. So send in your comments and you might get that. With all that said, though, you ready to do this thing, Adrian?
Yes, I am ready.
Awesome. I'm not, but one out of two is enough. So we're going to do this thing. Let's jump into this.
There, of course, remains a vital role for the federal government in protecting unborn life.
Do you believe in punishment for abortion? Yes or no, as a principle?
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah.
First of all, I'm the one that got rid of Roe v. Wade, and everybody said that was an impossible thing to do. I put on three Supreme Court justices.
That is Donald Trump. When it comes to abortion, when it comes to reproductive rights, he has a very clear track record of whether he genuinely is opposed to abortion or not. As a politician, he has promised that he's going to try to take away those rights, and he made good on it. You know, more so than perhaps almost any other issue. In his first term, he put justices on the Supreme Court that would and did significantly dial back reproductive freedoms. So that's the truth of who he is. And it's a truth that he would really prefer that you forget going into the 2024 election. According to leaks from his campaign, their strategy going forward is to pitch the guy who killed Roe v. Wade as a moderate on the topic of abortion. They're apparently planning to run the former president as some kind of sensible centrist on the issue during the general election. The magazine cited multiple anonymous sources as Rolling Stone, close to the Trump campaign, attesting to a plan he'd previously weighed, pursuing a middle path that might appease both Republicans and Democrats. Now, I don't know what that is supposed to be, but I would imagine that considering how mad Democrats already are at you, I don't know what that middle path is going to be that's going to supposedly placate them. And are there a lot of Republicans looking for a middle path on abortion these days? I feel like they've been fired up in the opposite direction. But before we dive into our conversation about whether this is likely to work, I just want to remind everyone of the sort of stuff that is waiting to be put into ads against Donald Trump if he tries to rebrand as a moderate. Not only all the videos that we just showed you, but when Roe v. Wade was taken out, he put out this statement saying, "Today's decision, which is the biggest win for life in a generation, along with other decisions that have been announced recently, were only made possible because I delivered everything as promised, including nominating and getting three highly respected and strong constitutionalists confirmed to the United States Supreme Court." Like, this is a guy that has none of the capacity that even some other politicians have to distance himself from his past, because he's a guy who desperately needs credit for the things that he has done or hasn't done, but still would like credit for. So he always goes on the record as saying that he's the one who did the thing. And this time, you know, considering the results of the last few elections, when it comes to people being rallied around the topic of abortion, him wanting that credit could come back to majorly bite him on the ass. Adrian, what do you think?
I definitely think it could bite him on the ass. You know, he really seemed to lean into the stance of allowing pro-choice abortion to be something that an individual gets to decide. And then, of course, he flipped with the evangelical crowd. And as a result of that, as you noted, putting those Supreme Court justices in the place so that they could help reverse Roe v. Wade. And now we're seeing so many states and so many individuals come out and push back, preserving and protecting their right to abortion in their state constitution or through other legislative measures. And the thing is that is just something that I believe so many Americans are not cool with going into this election. So I would like to hope a lot of people are considering that when it comes to whether to vote for Trump or for Biden.
Yeah, I would certainly hope so. I mean, it's been one of the strongest issues for Democrats over the last few electoral cycles. And so, of all of the things to have is your candidate, the guy who killed Roe v. Wade, seems like a bad choice. That said, I will throw out there that at least as of right now, Trump is still tied with Biden. And in theory, people should know that he's the guy that changed the Supreme Court. So some of that could or should already be baked in. Now, it hasn't been the target of literally months of advertisements from Joe Biden's campaign. So does that worry you a little bit? Or do you think it's not front of mind on people because they haven't seen the ads and all that?
So in terms of Trump and abortion and people saying that they're still backing Trump with the numbers being high, to some extent, I think people are posturing. I think that they're going to do something different when they enter those voting booths, because the fact is that they've created this cult following as well as this identity built around Donald Trump. And so for them to publicly have to come out and say, no, he's good and I like him and I wear his shirts, but I don't think I want him leading again. I don't think that that's something that they can handle by way of peer pressure. And so when they are truly alone in those voting booths, I think that that's where things are really going to show out.
Wait. So I'm trying to follow because I can see it going either way. Do you think that these polls are overestimating Trump's support or the opposite?
I think they're overestimating.
Okay, that's interesting because, you know, we've been told in the past two presidential campaigns that they're always underestimating his support. Now, granted, you know, he's been around for a lot longer now. Fingers crossed that it turns out that you're right. I want to remind people, by the way, that when we say that, you know, he was, I guess, one of the most effective anti-abortion presidents in history, it's not just a statement. It's not just him saying he wants literally the people getting the abortions to be punished. It's not just the Supreme Court. One of the first acts that he took in office was to reinstate and expand the global gag rule, which blocks foreign organizations that receive U.S. health assistance from providing information, referrals, or services for abortion access. He also stripped Planned Parenthood of Title X funding, which makes up roughly half of the organization's finances. And so if you want to pitch him as a radical on this topic, there's a lot of substance there. You don't have to lie, like sometimes they do in candidacies, in campaigns. And he's done so much of the work for you. So we'll see. I think that this could be a serious hit to him, as I'm sure some of it already was in past campaigns. And that's before Roe v. Wade was actually destroyed. Now, that said, that's not the only topic that's going to be big in this election. Trump is not only trying to rehabilitate his image when it comes to the topic of abortion, but also he once again apparently has the Affordable Care Act in his sights, so-called Obamacare. He had talked often as a candidate and as president about destroying this program. And every year it gets a little bit more popular as people get more sort of used to it being around. He's still talking about killing it. He put out a message saying the cost of Obamacare is out of control. Plus, it's not good capital H healthcare. I'm seriously looking at alternatives. Matt, pause for 1 second. He's seriously looking at alternatives. Yeah, he's just got policy briefs piled up on his desk and he's flipping through them and he's consulted with experts and everything. He's seriously looking at alternatives. I believe that. Anyway, we had a couple of Republican senators who campaigned for 6 years against it and then raised their hands not to terminate it. It was a low point for the Republican Party, but we should never give up. And look, it's responding to this reporting about Elizabeth Warren's, concerns about cost and everything. It's not that there is not a talk that needs to be had about reforms and evolution of the Affordable Care Act. I don't think anyone wanted the ACA's passage to be the final word on the law. But that's not what he's talking about. He's talking once again about killing it effectively. That's what he wants to do. And if he continues to talk like this, That's a thing that could hurt him. Joe Biden is already using against him. On Monday, Joe Biden said in remarks from the White House, my predecessor, once again, God love him, called for cuts that could rip away health insurance from tens of millions of Americans. They just don't give up. People are hurting. The last thing they need right now is to also lose their healthcare access. So he really, Adrian, just seems, Trump just seems like he kind of wants to lose this thing. Like, I don't know why you'd be focusing on these topics if your plan was to win, but what do you think?
Well, I think he's really reaching into the underlying message of racism. Basically, you had a black president come in and push for healthcare reform, get the Affordable Care Act passed and move forward. Now we have 40 million Americans who are benefiting from that. And the thing is that by continuing to call it Obamacare, that's what he is doing with the subliminal association of you, do you really want this thing that was created under the tutelage and the direction of this black man? And so hoping to ring those bells is hoping to send off alarms in people of saying, no, we don't want this. We reject it. Because when we look at the reason that the United States doesn't have universal health care, and we look at all of the efforts that were put into place throughout the decades, everyone was stopped in part because of the messaging of we don't want black people to have access to this. We don't want black people to have it. The fact is that racism is so rooted in our country that that's what Trump is doing. He's still signaling to reach to people to say, no, we don't want this because it is tied to this black man's name, as opposed to the fact that this is really beneficial for you and so many Americans out there. And it's truly sad.
Yeah, you are 100% right to point out how that has played into big discussions like the initial passage of ACA. You're 100% right about that, as well as, you know, like potentially getting actual universal healthcare. But everyone also should keep it in mind for conversations around things that haven't actually been passed, like, you know, universal family leave and, you know, universal access to higher education and stuff like that. Those same sorts of implicit biases and all that is still sometimes implicitly, sometimes explicitly influencing those conversations. So you're 100% right there. I want to give you a little bit more information about how the Democrats are likely to use this. So the Biden campaign is going to be running TV ads already. So, you know, we've been having this debate about how much, like how far into the Republican nominating contest we are, like how much Trump has sort of like clinched this thing. Well, Biden seems to think that it's over, I guess, already running ads against Trump. But also the Democrats put out a press release recently saying that repealing the Affordable Care Act would end critical protections for more than 100 million people with pre-existing conditions. I mean, honestly, imagine going back to that time. And that is what many Republicans are pushing for, is your pre-existing conditions can mean that you're just screwed for the rest of your life, literally. Okay, yeah, try to convince the countless millions of conservatives with pre-existing conditions that they should be denied access to healthcare for the rest of your life. Okay, have fun with that. It might even succeed because the Republicans have done a great job of convincing conservatives to vote against their economic interests, but it would allow insurance companies to reinstate annual and lifetime spending limits on coverage, put over 40 million people's health insurance at risk, threaten coverage for 69 million people who rely on Medicaid right now, massively increase costs for seniors who I hear vote, and people with disabilities who receive home care, cut access to substance abuse treatment and mental health care. Remember, that's like literally the only thing that they say they want to do in the wake of gun violence is increase funding for mental health care. Well, they want to cut it and force hundreds of rural hospitals to close. So once again, the Democrats have to be the party that is at least trying to do something minimal for those living in rural areas, as Republican efforts would harm them. So there's a lot of ways that this would impact people. And I just want to throw one extra thing out there before I get your extra comments, Adrian. But in terms of the polling for the Affordable Care Act, I actually have not seen polling over time for some time. So I saw this chart, and we could bring it up, and I was actually surprised by this. It has steadily grown over time, and it's slow over the last 6 years, more and more popular. You know, there's like a narrow dip now, but that's still like a 20 point or, you know, like 15 to 20 point favorability advantage, despite years of demonizing it on the right to Republicans. So bear that in mind. And yeah, some particular components like the protections for pre-existing conditions is far more popular than that. 66% of Republicans believe that if you have a pre-existing condition, you should still be protected and access to healthcare. So yeah, that if they want to make the election about that, I say giddy up, let's do it. Adrian, any other thoughts? Yeah,
I like that. That is very true and very smart. And it would be nice if people voted in their own interest. Can you imagine what our country could do if people were adequately taken care of, if we didn't have the Electoral College, all of these things that you just hope would be a functioning system. And I hope that with the Affordable Care Act, that if Trump is riding his election in part on reversing it, that people would recognize that that's not smart, that they don't want to go back to the Stone Ages where people could only get health insurance through the company that they worked for. You just really want to hope that people aren't going to roll us back. And hopefully with, like you showed that graphic and that chart, that more people approve of it. Let's hope that people realize this is something that needs to stay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's now bouncing around in my head, how capable they've been in getting people to vote against their economic interests. In the last few years, it's even worse. I mean, they convinced many people to get sick, suffer, and die.
Yep.
In pursuit of ideological goals that they were told were more important than their own lives, the lives of their family members. So, yeah, I'm a little bit.
And allowing, it's so weird. Well, no, it's actually not that weird when we think of how education has been structured in this country, where we just wanted good workers. What was that like? I don't think it was Rothschild, but it was one of those like Ford or something, one of the big guys we just want to create good workers. So yes. They don't want you to have the analytical skills. They don't want you to push back. They don't even want you to seek out actual experts as opposed to Joe Rogan. And so it's just really on par from exactly what we've created and shaped. And that's going to come back to bite us Planet of the Apes style in at least 2-3 decades.
Yeah, I don't exactly know why we would need experts. I mean, Joe Rogan is curious. Is he not curious, everyone? Does he not have an open mind? You know, as in things go in and then things come out. Anyway, it's a good state to be in as a country when the thought leader, Joe Rogan. Anyway, we'll see. Okay, so there are two topics that Trump apparently is dead set on making the focus of the election. Honestly, I guess it seems bad. And we've talked now for 16 minutes about why it's a bad call. But if you were facing 79 indictments, maybe making the election about healthcare is a better thing for you than about all the crimes you're alleged to have committed.
You don't mind if I go off teleprompter a lot, do you? So much more exciting. So much more. But the head of Hungary, a very tough, strong guy, Viktor Orban, they were interviewing him 2 weeks ago and they said, what would you advise President Obama? The whole world seems to be exploding and imploding. And he said, it's very simple. He should immediately resign and they should replace him with President Trump, who kept the world safe.
And now they're getting hit very hard by the North. And I'm really shocked that the Obama administration can be out there saying, I hope they don't attack from the North. Why are they doing that? How stupid is they?
Arrest their leading political opponent, and leading by a lot, including Obama. I'll tell you what, you take a look at Obama and take a look at some of the things that he's done. This is the same thing. The country is very divided. And we did with Obama. We won an election that everyone said couldn't be won. We beat Hillary Clinton.
Country is divided. Yeah, it's divided between people who think that Obama is still president for some reason and people who know that that's not true and hasn't been true for many years. Anyway, there are big divisions and his brain has some troubles. Clearly, he keeps mixing up Joe Biden and Barack Obama. In fact, at least 7 times in recent months, he has made that very specific flub. And so you combine that with his advanced age and the fact that he has never once in his life shown any interest whatsoever in maintaining the health of his body or his mind. And some people are concerned about his cognitive state. Is he actually capable of doing this job? You can also add in that he's constantly attacking Joe Biden for the same thing. And we know that Donald Trump is a guy who reflexively projects like no one else in American history. But don't worry about all that. He's got an explanation for all the flubs that you've seen. He put up a far too long truth. Whenever I sarcastically insert the name Obama for Biden as an indication that others may actually be having a very big influence in running our capital C country, Ron DeSanctimonious and his failing campaign apparatus, together with the Democrats, go wild saying that Trump doesn't know the name of our president. Crooked Joe Biden. He must be cognitively impaired. No, I know both names very well. Never mix them up and know that they are destroying our country. Also, and as reported, I just took a cognitive test as part of my capital P physical exam and aced it. Also aced a perfect score one taken while I'm the president. That was, of course, the, you know, the camera woman man, blah, blah, blah. So it is not that his brain is Swiss cheese. It's not, you know, leaking out of his ears. He's just being sarcastic. Adrian, do you buy that? And perhaps more importantly, because I think I know the answer to that, do you think that conservatives will buy that as an explanation?
I think conservatives are okay with being lied to their face, because I actually think the vast majority of people are okay with that. So I think as long as they think it sits in their interest in the end game, why acknowledge this reality? As far as his cognitive decline, I don't know that that man has all been there to begin with. Like his just appreciation for reality, his willingness to fabricate things. I don't know if there's ever been an instance or a situation where he has been candid or honest in any way. Maybe one of his wives has seen it. It's kind of like the sighting of some kind of Loch Ness monster. It maybe only comes up what every 1,000 years. And so I just don't know that if this man is really on a cognitive decline or if he's just leaning into truly who he is. Either way, I just really want to see him in handcuffs and put away somewhere where he cannot hurt us all by being in a position of leadership.
Yeah, yeah. Sign me up. Has he ever been honest? We don't know behind closed doors. You're right. Maybe with his wife or something. We do know he seemed to be pretty honest in the Access Hollywood tape when he didn't know the audio was getting out. That seems consistent with the rest of his life. But yeah, so I cannot say for sure, dear viewers, and whether it's just sarcasm or not. I mean, saying that Obama is actually president would fit in with right-wing conspiracy theories. So that's true. I mean, you saw the video and that does not appear to be what he was doing. But even if that is what he is doing, you know, saying Obama purposefully, sarcastically, to get Joe Biden, then that answers that issue with his brain. It doesn't answer some of the others. And look, I don't have the time to put together a comprehensive list of his other little cognitive flubs, but here are a few to consider. He recently forgot what state he was in and needed to be told in real time that it was not the state he thought. He said he'd never said that he would use special forces to attack drug cartels, even though he has done that multiple times enthusiastically. He has mixed up Kristi Noem and Nikki Haley. He has mixed up RFK Jr. and JFK Jr. He's mixed up George W. Bush and Joe Biden. He confused George W. Bush and Jeb Bush. He said that Joe Biden would get us into World War II. He said that Hunter Biden got paid by Afghanistan when the conspiracy theories are that he got paid by Ukraine or maybe China, but not Afghanistan. He's mixed up the leadership of China and North Korea. He called Viktor Orban the leader of Turkey. He said that Hungary borders Russia when it's 1,000 kilometers away at the shortest. So there's a lot of stuff in there, and I'm not exactly sure where sarcasm fits into some of that. Maybe some of that would be funny sarcastically. I don't get the World War II thing as sarcasm. I don't get the Kristi Noem and Nikki Haley thing as sarcasm. So I would say adding a little bit of political sarcastic Occam's razor to this, I think the simplest explanation is that he is a guy who didn't have a particularly strong mind when his body was at its best. And we're now decades on from that. And that, the passage of time combined with a diet of hamburgers over literally decades, probably has resulted in some cognitive decline, which face all of us in the future. I'm feeling a little bit of it too right now. I think that that is a better explanation.
Yes, and the worst part is he doesn't even drink. I'm just like, at least be like, you know, hey, I'm hungover or I had a little bit to drink. Nope, man has been sober as a jaybird.
If he was partying it up and then making little flubs, or if we believe that like he was an engaged father to Baron or something, so he was like having late nights, like JR is tired all the time. He's got, you know, kid. But no, that's not it. That's just who he is. But anyway, despite all of that, we have a poll about what people think about cognitive decline and all that with these candidates. So on Thursday, this poll from News Nation Decision Desk found that more than half of voters, 52%, were very concerned about Biden's cognitive health affecting his ability to serve another term. 38.2% said the same for Trump. Additionally, more voters said they were not at all concerned about Trump's cognitive health. That's 23% compared to Biden's. So Yeah, look, I would say that 23% about Trump could very well just be the 23% of the country that think that Trump could literally do no wrong, that he is God incarnate. So that's possibly true. And in terms of the overall evaluation of voters, I think it's that we have lower expectations for Trump, and there's been a lot more focus on Biden. I think it's a combination of those two things. They both make gaffes all the time. They both had weird physical things happen. They're both super old and arguably not in great shape, although Biden at least is still riding bikes around from time to time. We're going to have to see on into the election if this becomes a part of the advertising against Trump. Maybe that can get through to people. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think you're right. Unfortunately, the age thing, I think, is the strongest argument Trump has going for it. For him, as ageist as it is, the reality is you do decline and it takes a lot off your body to be president. And like Cenk has said, I completely agree. I think it's very selfish of Biden to even try to run again. I think it's gross.
Ted Cruz is, like many Republicans, so eager right now to hit the trans community any way he can, that in this case, he accidentally kind of caught himself in the crossfire. We're going to break down how that happened, but let's walk you through how we get there. So Representative Andy Ogles and Senator Ted Cruz have introduced bills in both the House side and the Senate side that would prevent federal agencies and departments from punishing anyone who refuses to use a person's correct name or pronouns. So if you were thinking Republicans don't deal with the big issues, no, they clearly do. Those people have to be protected for their hate. It's the most important thing that the government could be working on. They have more details. The Safeguarding Honest Speech Act would, quote, prohibit the use of funds to implement, administer, or enforce measures requiring certain employees to refer to an individual by the preferred pronouns of such individual or a name other than the legal name of such individual and for other purposes. Anyone punished for misgendering or misnaming someone could sue the federal official who disciplined them for up to $100,000. It's obviously madness. And when I say obviously, it's obvious because they also know it's not going to pass. Bear that in mind. So they can do crazy stuff that they can then go to their base and be like, hey, look at how insane this is. Don't you love me? Knowing that it's not going to pass. That bill, by the way, was created to oppose a directive from the Department of Health and Human Services that directed employees to use the names and pronouns that others use to describe themselves, which seems like it shouldn't be necessary. That just seems like common decency and courtesy, but apparently sometimes you need the government to weigh in. So here's what Ted Cruz said about this. He wrote, forcing anyone to use pronouns that don't accord with a person's biological sex is an unconstitutional violation of the First Amendment. The government has no business compelling anyone to use pronouns that contradict biological reality. Why the government or the person would care at all about the biological reality of a coworker seems madness to me. How is that your business? But that's what he wants the government business to be. Well, as was pointed out by Alejandra Caraballo, he's got this bill, but it specifically says you have to use the legal name of the person. If you use anything other than that, then no, you could sue for $100,000. And concludes by saying, I guess he wants to be called Raphael now. Yeah. Like, but I love that point by Alejandra because so many people use names that are not their actual name. They'll go by their middle name. They'll go by a nickname. They'll go by a shortened version of a name. And you know what happens in 999 out of 1,000 cases where people do that, where they say, hey, I'd prefer if you call me by this name. Everybody just does it because they haven't been trained to see this as an opportunity to spread some hate. But when it comes to a trans person's name, using their name or their pronouns, they have been trained to think that this is where my ideology should step in. And there shouldn't be any decency. There shouldn't be any politeness. This person doesn't deserve my common courtesy. They have no inherent worth. So I'm just going to try to stick it to them. And I demand that the government protect my ability to be a petty MF-er in that particular way. And so that's what Ted Cruz wants the business of government to be. Adrian, what do you think?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's what he wants the government to be focused on, which is so interesting because the US Supreme Court, when it was analyzing our Civil Rights Act in the terms of particularly with sexual harassment workplace, they were saying, you know, we don't want the Civil Rights Act to become a code of civility and we don't want to get into the nuances of those things. And yet it seems that Ted Cruz wants just the opposite, to get into these nuances of the indecencies and incivilities that people engage in, when the reality is that these are forms of discrimination when you will not address someone by how they have asked you to address them, and the fact that they come from a marginalized group or carry a marginalized identity, and you're doing it because of that person's sex or gender in some way. That is a form of discrimination. That is beyond little slights of incivility. And Ted Cruz just seems to want to conflate them all so he can push his agenda, when it's like, again, why do you care? This shouldn't be how our government is spending its time.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think it was on Newsweek. I apologize. It doesn't matter. But it was an op-ed, I think, on Newsweek. And it was like, here is why the Democrats are doing so bad. It's because the Democrats are obsessed with sex and gender. Yeah, are they?
Yeah.
Are they? Is it obsessed to be like, just call the person by what they want to be called? Or is it obsessed to be like, we're going to pass a federal law to protect your ability to not call them? Which of those is obsessed? The attack or the defense, the reluctant defense? We would love to not have to do this. It seems like you probably just call the person by what they want to be called. But you guys are passing bills all over the country. Every day you're discussing this on your shows and in state legislatures. Which side is actually obsessed in that way? And we're told constantly that we're supposed to work back to like this idyllic 1950s small town America where everybody's friendly and everybody goes to the same church. And like in that world, wouldn't you just call the person by what they want to be called, refer to them in a way that they find to comport with who they are? Like, why would you think that this is the hill that you need to die on? This is the fight that you need to wage. Utter madness. But we're told that we're the ones who have some sort of hang up on this. By the way, over 75% of trans people report having experienced some form of workplace discrimination, including deliberate misgendering. They're not referring to accidental slip-ups that you apologize and then move on with your life. We're talking about deliberate efforts to make this a thing. So bear that in mind. And not just verbal, also physical harassment as well. So thanks, Ted Cruz. Sorry, Raphael. I don't want to get in trouble with the law. Donald Trump is apparently trying to get out in front of what could be incredibly damaging testimony from Mike Pence that could be coming in the January 6th case if it goes to trial. And we know that because of a filing that his team recently put out saying the potential criminal charges faced by Vice President Pence gave him an incentive to curry favor with authorities by providing information that is consistent with the Biden administration's preferred and false narrative regarding this case, talking about January 6th and the various attempts to overturn the results of the election. So we don't know what Mike Pence will say if and when he ends up having to testify, but we do have quite a bit of information about what he has told special counsel, the special counsel's office in the past. And so we want to run you through just a little bit of this and why this is something that is apparently like sticking in the craw of Donald Trump and his team. So Pence apparently has told prosecutors he believed Trump's attorneys who pushed to overturn the results were cranks. That's his word, who did a great disservice to the president and a great disservice to the country. That is actually like kind of needlessly deferential to Donald Trump, saying the cranks did a disservice to Donald Trump. Like they twisted his arm to overturn the results of the election. Like he was an enthusiastic participant in it, and said that there was no idea more un-American than Trump's claims that Pence could single-handedly block the election results. He also told investigators he's sure that in the days leading up to January 6th, he informed Trump he still hadn't seen evidence of significant election fraud, but Trump was unmoved, continuing to claim the election was, quote, stolen and acting recklessly on January 6th, what Pence called a tragic day. And what's interesting isn't that we have these sort of general leaks that have come out of what he's told them, or even some of the specifics, but it's got really granular information, including a reference to something that was in Mike Pence's book. So sources said that investigators questioning got to the point of debating over a placement of a comma. So when recounting a phone call with Trump on Christmas Day 2020, so right before January 6th, Pence wrote in his book that he told Trump, quote, you know, comma, I don't think I have the authority to change the outcome. But Pence told the special counsel's team that the comma should have never been there, and then it should have read, you know, I don't think I have the authority to change the outcome, suggesting Trump was well aware of the limitations on Pence's ability to change the result. By the way, even if that didn't exist, he had been told by many other people that Pence cannot overturn the results of the election. It is insane on its face to believe that Mike Pence could change the result of the election. But I love that while he's been super weak sauce in criticizing Trump in public, behind the scenes, Mike Pence has been providing what could be really damning information. Adrian, what do you think?
It really seems that that Mike Pence is not, he's just not really an individual of very much courage or really ethical models. You know, I'm really happy he dropped out of the presidential race because he did seem very strong initially, of course, when his life was threatened at the January 6th attack. But then after that, it was just like McCarthy flip-flop wish-wash kind of thing. And I think that that is also something that the voters weren't in support of. Like, you have to be willing to stand up and to take a position and to stand with it. And the fact that you're so malleable to whatever Trump beholds, it just seems to speak volumes to the fact that this individual isn't one who should be in a leadership position and should not necessarily be strong. And the fact that he's working with prosecutors right now, it just, I'm glad he is, but it just makes him seem kind of grimy.
Yeah, I mean, you could add that to a long list of things that make him seem grimy. But yeah, he could end up testifying. March is when we expect that particular one to go forward. Although there's been all this stuff with Judge Eileen Cannon, I believe, where she's like doing some tricky stuff that could potentially throw off the timeline of the other cases. It's been a little bit difficult to follow that, but we're going to keep our eye on it because remember, we've just got, there's so many balls in the air that they're juggling when it comes to these different cases. We're going to have to see what comes out and how it affects other cases. But anyway, Pence gave other information. We don't need to dive into all of it. It's like replaying the hits for people who've been following this from the very beginning, but Pence was super clear, at least to Smith's team. We're going to see how valuable that is. And we're also going to see how effective Donald Trump's attempt to be like, this is not him being honest. He is lying to protect himself, which I assume is a defense that he's going to use, not just against Mike Pence, but others who've been providing information to the special counsel's team. But for that, stay tuned to find out.
To plaintiff Robbie Parker. A, defamation / slander damages past and future, $60 million.
Yeah.
B, emotional distress damages past and future, $60 million. Rick Parker and against Alex Jones and Free Speech Systems, and line A and line B, total $120 million.
Yeah.
Ruled by jury. To plaintiff David Wheeler and against Alex Jones and Free Speech Systems, and line A and line B, $55 million.
Yeah.
Initial.
Never said their name, don't know who they are. 57 million, 20 million, 50 million, 80 million, 100 million, blah, blah. You get a million, you get 100 million, you get a 50 million. Do these people actually think they're getting any money?
So that's, of course, Alex Jones. And a little flashback to his pretending to be excited that he was going to owe so much money to the families of the victims of the Sandy Hook shooting that he spent years of his life demonizing and conspiracy theorizing about and inspiring harassment and having them run out of their homes. And all the while, he was making huge sums of money off of doing that and generating a following amongst some of the worst people in the country. And finally, we had this case that he lost and he was going to owe a ton of money, $1.5 billion. The issue is that he has spent every minute between that and now, despite how happy he was to see the verdict, fighting to not have to pay the families literally a cent. And there's a new settlement being proposed that would require him to almost only pay cents, actually, cents on the dollar. $85 million over the course of a decade rather than the $1.5 billion that supposedly he should owe right now. So why would this be the proposed settlement from the families? Well, because they've been put in this horrible situation where they've been led to believe they'll get nothing. Lawyers for the family said they believe the proposal was a viable way to help resolve the bankruptcy reorganization cases of Jones and his company, Free Speech Systems. Basically, he's tried reorganizing the nature of his company and where the money is, all this legal, tomfoolery and trickery to try to hide the sources of money and all that. But anyway, the attorneys accuse him of failing to curb his personal spending, which we will break down, and extravagant lifestyle, failing to preserve the value of his holdings, refusing to sell assets, and failing to produce certain financial documents. And so they've offered him two options, either liquidate his estate and give the proceeds to creditors, which it would seem if you owe $1.5 billion, you would have to do, but apparently he doesn't. Or pay them at least $8.5 million a year for 10 years, plus 50% of any income over $9 million per year. So the basic idea being that he has to pay a very tiny fraction of what he owes. And if he makes more than $9 million off a year off of his media company from spreading more hate and insanity, then he would have to pay only half of that at that point, kind of a tax on him weaponizing and monetizing hate. So we don't know if that's going to work. Apparently, his lawyers are saying that it's too high and unrealistic that he would be expected to be able to pay that. We're going to debate whether that's an accurate assessment of his financial situation. But Adrian, you're the actual lawyer, whereas I just watch Suits. So what do you make of this proposed settlement and the way that he has avoided having to pay what he owes?
The way in which Alex Jones has navigated this judgment or dodged it is really somewhat of an art. You know, the fact that he had tried to claim he didn't have certain assets, reorganize his company, even destroy his company, throw it into bankruptcy, all of these things, it really shows that this man is he's a criminal in his own right, just by virtue of the fact that he is unwilling to acknowledge when he is engaged in these disinformation, misinformation campaigns, intentionally hurting people and defaming people, and then refusing to accept any kind of accountability for it. And I think that this proposed settlement is sufficient in some way for the amount of money that he owes these individuals. But the fact that he is still pushing back, he will push back until he pays $0, instead opting to pay legal fees because he does not want to be held accountable. It's gross.
Yeah, so much about this is gross. Everything leading up to the verdict and the way that he's avoided having to pay it. Look, they say he doesn't have this money. They just, you can't get him to pay it. Here's the issue is that we do have some information about what his company has made, what he has spent. Apparently, the company said it's expected to make about $19.2 million just next year, just from selling dietary supplements, clothing, and other merchandise. So that's not ad revenue and all of that, sponsorship deals. That's just off of selling, you know, t-shirts and ground up like gorilla testicle brain supplements. That's all that is. $19 million, but he can't afford to pay this. He has listed $13 million in total assets, including $856,000 just in bank accounts, just sitting there waiting. Doesn't need to be sold off. The money is just there. He has been receiving a salary of $20,000 every 2 weeks. Think about what you pay. He makes 20 grand every 2 weeks. It's 40 grand a month, actually slightly more than that. It's like 45 grand a month, $520,000 a year. That was eventually upped to $1.5 million a year because he's so vital to the company. So he's making $1.5 million a year. By the way, according to court papers, he spent $93,000 in July of this year, excluding legal fees, but including more than $15,000 with the first of his two ex-wives, $7,900 for housekeeping. Is that like a new house? $6,000 on entertainment and meals. I buy that one. And $3,400 on groceries. So he sure has a lot of money to live it up, but not money to give to them. And I'm sure the legal team for the families doing everything they can to try to get access to that money. But the idea that he can have homes and spend massive amounts of money and all that, and it isn't just seized, I don't understand anything about this. And I think most people probably find the entire situation to be so sickening that they've probably just like tuned out. But when you dive into this, it is incredibly gross that this guy can ever have a significant amount of money again in his life, considering all that he owes and refuses to pay. Adrian, why isn't it easier to just sell your house?
Like, yeah, you would think
he has money, rent a little apartment. If you can't afford the house, that's fine. You owe that money. So you sell the house, you sell your cars, you sell your plane or whatever it is that you have. Why is he allowed to have assets like this when he owes $1.5 billion?
Exactly. You committed a tort against people and you changed their lives for the worse. And now you are having to pay a judgment for that. You agreed to be part of the citizen of our country and our laws and to abide by them. And you violated them. So now you have to make sacrifices. So make sacrifices. Like you said, John, like get an apartment, sell off some of your things. But instead, you know, he has these various companies in play, hiding assets here. Giving certain amounts of money to different family members and whatnot. He is really gaming the system. And this is oftentimes what we see from very wealthy people. And it's unfortunate, but it's also completely unsurprising given all of the behavior Alex Jones has engaged in and how our system is structured to keep the wealthy wealthy.
100%. Yeah, and like most people would be like, no, how he can never you make him live in an apartment. What are you talking about? Why is the assumption that a guy like Alex Jones can never just be a regular person who's not wealthy? Well, and the answer is elitism, what he supposedly is against. We're supposed to believe that all these people should be wealthy. I saw an article about how Kyle Rittenhouse is like broke now. Maybe we'll talk about it tomorrow on the show. And my reaction was, why is that news? Why would he be rich as a result of what he did? Wait, there's no reason to believe he had money beforehand. And then he killed some people. Why is the assumption, oh, that person's in the news, so they're millionaires for the rest of their life? Why is that the way our society functions? But it 100% is. Teenage girls in the United States are increasingly being targeted by now freely available and widely used deepfake producing technology, and finding that in many cases, there's not much that they can do about it. So fake nude photos, videos are being produced and disseminated, in some cases anonymously, in some cases not. And both states, the federal government, and schools are struggling with trying to figure out what they're supposed to do about this, because the laws on the books don't actually protect the victims of this sort of crime. Apparently at New Jersey's Westfield High School, more than 30 girls learned on the 20th of October that they had been depicted in explicit AI manipulated images. One, Francesca Manny, said, "I didn't know how complex and scary AI technology is. I was shocked because me and the other girls were betrayed by our classmates, which means it could happen to anyone by anyone." And a month after that incident, where almost an entire classroom of girls was targeted, Francesca and her mother said they don't know the identities or the number of people who created the images, how many were made, if they still exist, if there were any punishments. And apparently the school declined to comment, but had previously said they're not going to release any information about any of this because they don't have to. So those things were being spread, and maybe something was done. Maybe there were punishments. Or maybe there was literally nothing at all. How is that an acceptable status quo? We have more, but Adrian, what do you think?
That is a fantastic question, and completely and totally illogical one. The fact is that we deserve to know as members of society that these actual crimes are really being rectified. And it's unfortunate that they can't actually be official crimes, because our society, in terms of our legislature, has not moved quickly enough to really actually foresee these crimes that would come down the pike. And I don't know why, other than the fact that they are primarily going to impact women and girls, just like the situation is here. Like, this is something that I had given an opinion piece in my work for Straight Arrow News on 8-9 months ago, forecasting the fact that there would be these deep fake nudes that would be tragic for these young girls and women. And also that would always exist on the internet in some form, which would cripple their ability to get jobs, to have access to a good life with economic independence. It would get in the way of that. And yet we still don't have legislature or any expertise in any way curbing this, because we also need law enforcement officers who are actually trained in this. We need a complete and total different field now that AI is truly expanding in the realm where it can be very damaging and harmful to the everyday civilian.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're 100% right. There has to be a law enforcement component. There has to be a legislative component. In New Jersey, there is a pending state bill that would ban deepfake pornography and impose criminal and civil penalties for non-consensual disclosure. That's just pending. It doesn't exist, which is the status quo legally for a lot of states. And look, it is an incredibly difficult situation, because like, this technology is fairly new. A year, two, three, something like that, years old. But with the speed that AI in general is advancing, it's going to become easier and easier for people who are not tech savvy to produce all sorts of AI generated stuff. And, you know, knowing our culture, knowing teen boys, this is going to be a big part of that. And so the question is, what are you going to do to protect people? It's going to be incredibly difficult. It's going to be a super difficult fight that has to have multiple components, not just legislative and law enforcement, but cultural and social. You know, and how do we, John, as a society?
I'm so sorry. I was going to say is also the fact is that I was thinking of this last night, because I'm teaching it to my students in media law. What happens when we have deep fake child pornography? Well, that should be covered under the statute.
She's 15.
Yeah.
That girl at least is 15 years old. So arguably that's already what it is.
Yeah, there you go. And yeah, I don't even know if that's covered under the federal statute right now, based on how it's written. So what are we going to do as a society? Because there's a thought that since this is something created that isn't truly real, that it's just a thought crime, how are we going to approach this? This should have been thought about by legislature months ago. You have to think like a 100%. Criminal.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah. And how do we like socially like come to grips with a future where everyone is going to be in videos like this? Theoretically, anyone at any time could be. How do we have the media literacy to know to question these things? How do we have the, I guess, semi-evolved view to not judge people for non-consensual pornography they were put into? So there's a lot of components to this. At the very least, though, we could get some laws on the books as a little bit of a deterrent. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.